Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Everybody and welcome. You have tuned in to episode number 188 of Linux in the Ham Shack, an episode we are going to preliminarily call the Scratchy Throat episode. And I am your host, Rust, K5TUX, and we also have from getting warmer still, Big Sky Country, Montana, Bill, NE4RD.
Good evening, everyone.
And we also have across from me, Cheryl.
Hello, everyone.
Who still says she's getting her ticket at Hamvention. Or thereabouts.
Maybe. We had this discussion the other day.
Yeah, we'll make it happen.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
All right. I guess we'll start off with our amateur radio topics for the evening. And the first one we have is FCC personal radio service revisions will affect GMRS, FRS, and Citizens Band. The FCC has conducted a thorough review of the PRS rules in order to modernize them, remove outdated requirements, and reorganize them to make it easier to find information. The rules will increase the number of communications channels for both GMRS and FRS, expand digital capabilities to GMRS, and increase the power/range for certain FRS channels to meet consumer demand for longer range communications, while maintaining higher power capabilities for licensed GMRS. The amended rules will eliminate combination radios, but will allow up to 2 watts PEP output for FRS transceivers. Changes to the decades-old Citizens Band rules will remove outdated requirements, including certain labeling requirements. DXing on Citizens Band will also become legal. CBers will be allowed to contact stations outside of the FCC-imposed and widely disregarded 155.3-mile distance limit. The revised CB rules further clarify how hands-free devices can be used with CB radios and will allow the use of wireless microphones with CB radios. The rule changes will phase out voice scrambling features in all Part 95 devices and will prohibit manufacturer importation or sale of any devices incorporating such features. And this actually came from QRZ Now. I think they actually got it from the ARRL, but that's okay. Yeah, so that's interesting. I didn't even know there was a CB distance limit.
I didn't either. I mean, I remember,
I know there's a wattage limit.
My elder talking about it, you know, doing DXing on CB back in the 60s when it was, you know, you had to have a license and everything else. Yep. And it was quite common back.
So that's interesting. And I actually had a GMRS license for a little while, but the $100 price tag seemed pointless to re-up. So because you get
you get in when there's the free one.
Oh, they have free ones?
Well, no, they changed it. So like there was a period of time for like about, I don't know, 48 hours that the FCC wasn't charging for them. So you could pick one up for nothing, which I might have gotten one. After that, I think they went back up to 60.
Well, that's okay. Yeah. So if you use those little handheld, you know, GMRS or FRS radios, some rules are being changed. No biggie. And of course, CB is not actually going to change at all. It's just going to, the rules are going to be changed to reflect the way that people already use it. So pretty much that's that on a not really amateur radio topic, but it is about radio. And I actually saw an article today when I was perusing Google News, and there was a pilot on there who was advocating bans of using handheld radios in cars. It's like, you're a jerk. or you know, anything with a microphone, basically.
Well, I mean, we've been talking about that over the past few shows of various states imposing restrictions on, you know,
right,
wireless and portable devices in the vehicle. And I think they're still working on that over in California.
They're working on it all over the place, but a lot of the states have exemption for radio use. I think it's partially because of law enforcement and stuff like that, and they just keep the exemption fairly wide. But if you've ever seen police drive, they're like lunatics because they've got their radios going and the laptop. they just cannot drive with all that crap going on in their car. But
liking stuff on Facebook all day.
Right.
Yeah, well, exactly. I've a friend that I went to high school with is a highway patrolman, and he had a wreck about 2 years ago texting his wife. And he was off on administrative leave for a while they yelled at him about that for a while. Yeah. So
well,
stop, I mean, text, stop wrecks, right?
All right, right. Yeah.
All right, moving on, we have another story out of Taiwan. They are dropping the Morse code requirement for hams. The National Communications Commission, NCC, in Taiwan is to abolish the amateur radio Morse code requirement and permit 432 to 440 megahertz operation. The commission has already approved the amendments. However, it is obligated to make the amended regulations available for public view for 2 months and then make any changes deemed necessary before they can take effect. The amendments also extend the validity of amateur radio operating licenses from 5 years to 10 years, but amateur radio operators must pass tests to achieve the extension. In addition, the amendments stipulate that amateur radio operators would be able to start renewing their licenses 5 months before their license expire. NCC data shows that 42,900 licenses for qualified amateur radio operators were issued between 2012 and 2016. I wonder how many of them are like actually like American workers abroad or expats or...
It's probably a good number of them considering most of the Department of Defense businesses are in Taiwan.
Yeah, but still there's 42,000 plus just in the last 4 or 5 years you can talk with. I guess BX8AAD, he's in Taiwan. So, and he's one of our listeners. So this pretty sure he's Taiwan, right? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Taiwan.
Don't look at me.
Yeah.
Anyway. I'm not going to look it up.
I'm not going to look at it anyway. I think he was in Taiwan, but.
We'll make an assumption there. Yeah. Right. I being on Whisper and JT65 often, I don't see Taiwan pop up on the map too often.
Maybe they're just not into Whisper.
Could be. They might just be used to talking out loud.
InstantRimshot.com. We actually talked about this on an old episode, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
So
slid that in.
Yeah.
Well, the FCC is at it again. So, Bill, you can talk about that.
Yeah, sure. The FCC wireless auctions concluded back here in March, just about 2 months ago now. This is more of a general user to wireless systems news article, but I thought it was relevant since, hams like us may use wireless microphones from time to time and may have bought some commercial gear off the shelf. But common wireless microphone systems that operate in the range of 616 to 653 megahertz and 663 to 698 megahertz must be replaced or removed from service over the next 39 months. The FCC sold the spectrum in March and is no longer available for use by these devices. If you have an affected device, there might be an opportunity to get a rebate on a trade-in, so check with your manufacturer or dealer. And how this is relevant to us is that, bands are easy come, easy go. Spectrum usage and defense are important for us as amateur radio operators, so we need to make sure we're using the bands, we're using them effectively and responsibly, and we do everything we can to prevent losing them to third-party services or whomever the FCC decides to sell them to. And this article was actually a blog post from Sweetwater, a music company.
Which is actually kind of cool because I buy most of my gear from Sweetwater.
It's definitely something to think about for spectrum defense.
All right. Well, the headphone distribution amp and the cables and the headphones and the mics and everything that we're going to be using at Hamvention all came from there. So
there you go. We're not sponsored by them, but they could sponsor us.
No. Yeah, that's right. If someone wants to mention that to them, we're certainly open to some, cross-pollinization, I guess. And actually, I do have a wireless mic system. I'll need to see if it actually uses one of those frequencies. I don't know that it does, but I guess I'm going to have to go and check now.
Yeah, it's pretty common for like the in-ear monitors and stuff like that. Those seem to be the ones that they were pointing out in the article.
Okay, well, I don't have an in-ear or anything like that. I have an actual, like a regular dynamic microphone wireless system, but obviously have to go check anyway. All right, this next one's kind of interesting. I like legalese type stories. So we're moving away from amateur radio and into the open source world and into tech trolling, which is evil. So tell us about evil.
Yeah, tech troll sues the Electronic Frontier Foundation to silence the stupid patent of the month blog. Now the EFF sues them back. The Electronic Frontier Foundation is countersuing a patent troll that wants its name removed from a stupid patent of the month blog post. Global Equity Management, S.A. Pty Limited, otherwise known as GEMSA, GEMSA, is incorporated in Australia and exists only to bring patent litigation, making it a classic patent troll, the EFF claims. The EFF was not impressed. The patent itself that was in question was made in 1999, and it was a display of file cabinets for files. You can take a look at it. It's linked in the show notes from the Register article. But basically, they're fighting this for the free speech part of it, of them calling it a stupid patent. So basically, the GEMSA is suing them for calling it stupid, and the EFF is suing them for interfering in our First Amendment free speech rights on calling it stupid. So it's kind of one of those weird things, and GEMSA needs to just shut up and go away, because, I mean, they're suing a company in California through a judge in Texas, which, of course, we all know why that happens, because all the patent trolls go to Texas.
I honestly think the free speech part of this has way more merit. I mean, clearly. Okay, yeah, boring. Moving on. All right, so let's compare the terms open source and free software. We touched on this a long, long time ago, probably in episode like 40-something, and discussed the difference between open source and free software, and I think it was probably Richard Stallman or someone along those lines who is complaining about them not being interchangeable, though everyone sort of uses them interchangeably. So what does thou have to say?
So yeah, this was an interesting pair of articles. I actually caught the second one on Hacker News or Hack News, yeah, Hacker News. And so I went back and I read the first one, and it was kind of interesting. So the first article points out that open source is a better term than free software, and cut a bunch of stuff out. But whilst technically they mean the same thing, people who use these terms have different attitudes. Users of the term open source are people who enjoy programming collaboratively. Users of the term free software do too, but also consider proprietary software to be a violation of a user's rights and bad for society, as it gives mega corporations power over us. Open source is a descriptive technical term, and the virtues of open source are implied by its name. Someone hearing the term for the first time can already imagine that someone might want to study and modify the code. So that was kind of the argument there. And, you know, that makes exact sense for what Stallman and everybody else said. The second article spins it around the other way and says that, you know, free software is better used over than open source. And the author states that he changed his mind completely and explains why he said everything was actually wrong. And the one takeaway that I brought out from that was a comment. He says, because greater than 99% of computer users are non-programmers, don't really understand the open source side because of the coding side, right? Because they're just users. They want free software. Right. They understand free software and what free software is. You know, it's free as in beer, whatever. So I think it's possibly the audience changes the real meaning of the term, as it does in almost every case. It's always the point of view. Either way, you can use either one. It's whatever you feel the use is. Anyway, it's just an interesting kind of point, counterpoint on himself about the differences between the two.
Well, I think there's something to be said for the term free and open source, you know, often abbreviated FOSS or whatever, because that actually puts the two ideas together and is less ambiguous. Because I think open source just describes how the software is propagated and doesn't imply any freedom, or it doesn't describe anything about the software other than its method of creation. And free software is kind of a stupid term as well. I don't know who decided to pick the term free, since in English it has two meanings, and the one that they really mean is the one that people sort of don't immediately associate with it. So there's probably a better term for all of this, but
yeah, I like FOSS. I mean, that really explains, it gives it all, right?
Yeah, because you can bat this around all over the place, because some open source software is free and some free software is not open source. You know what I'm saying? Because some open source software is not free. Like, just look at Red Hat. It's a rabbit hole we don't need to go down. You get the idea. Links to information about that will be in the show notes as soon as I get the Etherpad fixed again. So, getting closer. I've actually recovered all the old data. Now I just have to figure out how to get to it. If anyone has ever bothered to look at the database structure of a collaborative online editor, it's a nightmare. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So We have a couple, several actually, Flash topics in our open source area for the evening. So what's insomnia other than something I suffer from frequently?
Yeah, exactly. The title caught me. And again, I think this was on Hacker News. This was linked to Insomnia is an application built with late night developers in mind. Insomnia will remind you to take a rest and that you can always come back to work tomorrow. It's inspired by Sleepy Times, sleepytie.me, one of those fantasy domains, a website that calculates optimal times to fall asleep based upon when you want to wake up. The idea is that when you wake up in the middle of a sleep cycle, you will feel groggy. However, if you wake up during the transition between sleep cycles, you will feel refreshed. This application uses averages that sleep cycles are 90 minutes each, and a person takes 15 minutes to fall asleep from when they begin to try and calculates the times for you to sleep. It will notify you through the night when optimal times to shut down your computer and start to head to sleep and provide a button just to do that. This project is available on GitHub. It is open source, and it's already pre-compiled for just about every OS, and I believe it runs in the Task Manager or Task Bar or Applet or whatever you would like. Based on your operating system.
I find it amusing that it's an application that creates an alarm to tell you to go to sleep.
Yeah, wakes you up and goes to sleep. Wakes you up and goes to sleep.
Moving on, if you need that kind of help, if you're a late night developer, I actually Ubered a late night developer. That was one of the people I picked up at 4:30 in the morning from the e-factory and took home.
Interesting. Yeah, and you were up at 4:30, so there you go.
Yeah, but I was doing Uber.
Of course, Ubering. That justifies everything.
Doing commerce.
I was making money. So we also have Android in a box. You know, I've only tried one Android system that wasn't like a phone or a tablet or something like that. I used, what's it called? Andy OS, which allows you to run Android in a virtual environment, I guess. It doesn't look like a virtual environment. It looks more like an application. It works reasonably well, but I have not seen this Android in a box. So what is it?
So Anbox puts the Android operating system into a container, abstracts hardware access, and integrates the core system services into a GNU Linux system. Every Android application will be integrated with your operating system like any other native application. To achieve this goal, the standard Linux technologies like containers, LXC, are used to separate the Android operating system from the host. Any Android version is suitable for this approach, and attempts are made to keep up with the latest available version of the Android open source project. So this comes in a snap package.
Oh no, snaps.
I couldn't get it to work. That's why I turned it into a Flash topic. I'm going to circle back around on this and see if I can actually get it to come in. For some reason, it just blows up as soon as it tries to add the kernel modules, but I installed the kernel modules by hand. They work fine, so I'm not sure why it's whiny. So, anyways.
Get an Ubuntu system together and try doing this with the snap and see what happens. It sounds interesting if you get it to work, though, because there's a couple of applications I would love to be able to launch on a bigger screen than a tablet in an Android environment.
Yeah, there's like, you know, a whole bunch of cool little apps that I have on the desktop. But no, didn't work for me.
All right. Well,
Oh, snap.
We'll both give it a try and maybe come back to it in the next episode. Although it may be the episode after that, because the next one is Hamvention. So it's that close, people. Hamvention is really that close. Anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that later. We also have one more Flash topic in the open source world, and that's the 4.11 Linux kernel has been released. And with this release, Linux is now better at hot swapping solid state disks and can now do journaling on RAID 4, 5, and 6 volumes. There's also support for the Opal self-encrypting disk drive standard. The kernel has also gained support for the shared memory communications over RDMA, SMC-R spec, an IBM invention that allows virtual machines to share memory and therefore speeds up communications between the machines, helps with load balancing, and doesn't hurt when clustering Linux boxing. I always enjoyed that plural of box, and it's kind of neat to see it actually in an article. Enterprise users and gamers will both be happy that the kernel adds improved support for Intel's Turbo Boost Max Technology 3.0, technology that lets a CPU figure out which of its cores is fastest, and then increase its clock speed in response to critical workload needs. The release of version 4.11 means that the merge window is open for the next version of the Linux kernel. As ever, would-be contributors have a little over a week to offer their ideas and code before Linus sets the next version of Linux down the assembly line. Linux is now faster.
Faster, faster.
Faster, faster. Bigger, better, faster, more. Which, by the way, is a great album. And if you can
you
guess...
You need that segue for like the music set.
Yeah, except we can't play that music because it's not Creative Commons. So
Are we going to play that one song today?
We are going to play that one song. It's not going to make it to the release version, so only people who are in the chat room right now.
It's not going to make it the release version because of language.
Because of the language.
Yeah, yes. Okay.
So that's it for our open source topics. Now we're going to move on to Linux in the Ham Shack. And we're talking about a tool for figuring out how to make a random wire antenna.
Yeah, so this is part of my normal dumpster dive into GitHub. It started with this project.
You're going to get sued by a patent troll for calling GitHub a dumpster dive or something.
Yeah. Sorry, it's not really a dumpster. I love GitHub. It's like my favorite.
It's even a though
treasure
it's,
trove.
Even though it's really like a tire fire. It's
yeah, tire fire. Yeah, you can find 90% of all coders work in commercial packages showing up from the code snippets in here. Anyway. Yeah, so the amateur radio random wire length tool. This is a direct port of the code found here, link, but with it being written in C and MATLAB, the author found it was quite restrictive to use, and I can see why. So this gentleman here decided to port it to JavaScript. Yay!
Why pick JavaScript? I mean, come on.
I know. I was thinking the same thing. Oh, darn, it's Node.js. So anyway, so that it's much easier to run, in his opinion. Feel free to comment, tweak away with your heart's content. Prerequisites, Node.js, and GNU plot. So if you can get Node.js working, hello, it'll probably do what you want. So this is linked here in GitHub. A few other projects that I found in GitHub while I was searching for recent changes. AB4UG, that's I'm a bug on IRC, which he's not in the channel. He's working on a PHP web ham radio logging application. So check his GitHub repo. Kevin Hook is working on a packet to Twitter bridge using JavaScript and MongoDB. That's also there in GitHub. And MM Torney, sorry I didn't look up these people's real names, is working on a ham radio implementation of LTE, which consists of simplified LTE specifications suitable for amateur radio use, adaptations of LTE to ham bands called ham LTE and narrow bandwidths, software radio implementation of ham LTE, and documentation on how to set up a working ham LTE base station. Source and everything else and links are in the GitHub repo, and that looks like a pretty interesting project. So I'm going to have to look at that one a little bit further. I think the main site is actually in Finnish or something like that. So got to do a little Google Translate on the wiki page that they have set up for the Ham LTE project, and take a look at that. But yep, that was my trip through GitHub.
That's actually some pretty interesting stuff. I probably need to hit up Kevin Hook there and talk to him about MongoDB, because that's one thing that has been on my radar of things to learn about and haven't had a chance to. Of course, I would, if I had an actual use case for it, I would have learned it a long time ago, but I see lots of people using it, so I'd like to get some info anyway.
Yeah, I did all those MongoDB University classes that they offered, like little free, I don't know, like 6 or 7 week programs, and go through and do exercises and turn in your homework at the end of the week, and got my little certificates and stuff like that. But it's pretty interesting, platform, and definitely has a lot of potential.
Don KC9ZMY in the chat room says he's fighting with Node.js right now. And actually I was fighting with Node.js earlier today. I had my Python set to Python 3 instead of 2.7. And apparently some part of the installation procedure for Node uses Python. I'm not sure why that is, because Node is JavaScript, but the installation procedure like blew up and there were packages that were like in, incorrect states and everything. So I finally got rid of all of that. And then I changed my Python version to 2.7 and did an apt install Node, or it's actually Node.js, N-O-D-E-J-S, and NPM, and it installed and worked beautifully. The only thing is it doesn't actually alias Node.js to Node. I had to do that manually. But when I did that, it all worked perfectly. The node that came out of the Jesse repository worked fantastic. It's version 4, 1.4 or 4, whatever it is, versus 6 or 7 or whatever the current one is. So I guess if you're trying to install Node from their package repositories, make sure you check on your Python version, because apparently it matters. So moving on, Ubuntu has released a new version. What is it? Is something Zesty Zapus?
Zesty Zapus.
Or Zapus? Well, I think technically, based on the rules of English, it should be Zapus, but who knows? It's a zesty Zapus anyway.
It's very zesty. Yeah. So,
you said that a little too enticingly. It's
yeah, especially when it's budgie. So this is the new version of Ubuntu is just released 17.04. And it, I thought it was LTS because it was 04. I was so programmed to think in an 04 release, an April release is an LTS. And of course, it's not. Our next LTS release will be 18.04. But anyway, this is available in all the usual flavors. Plus, this is the first official release of the Budgie edition, which I was interested in because we had talked about it previously, but it was kind of breaking and it was basically built on the 16.10 build. And was not very friendly. So I decided to go ahead and take the dive in, and I was getting a little bit tired of my Arch system. I was running Manjaro Budgie before, and so I just swooped up the home directory and rebuilt it, and I've been running it for a little bit more than a week, and it's great. Yeah, I added some PPAs in there, the usual ham radio ones that I always talk about. There is not on the WSJTX next one that I add, there's not currently a build for Zesty in there, but it only complains a little bit when you do the you do the apt update. So don't worry about that. WSJTX still installs fine. It just does not like that being attached to that PPA during that time. I also did the CQR log PPA, and of course that ran without any problems. That whole install CQR log and the database doesn't exist when you run it out of the PPA. So definitely go that route. I added the PPA for the Budgie backports itself. So like if the Budgie team releases a fix and they build a package, you know, I want it pretty much when it's ready to go. Because apparently there was some minor bug that's in 17.04 for Budgie. I didn't experience it, nor did I research what it was. I just said, well, I'm going to add the PPA and make sure I don't have to worry about that. So right now I have that running as well. And I added the PPA for the backports in the show notes, and I gave this an LHS readiness score of 4.8. It's running great and looks beautiful.
Running great and looks beautiful. Those are definitely the key. All about that eye candy.
Yep, and I did the whole ham radio meta packages, installed a lot of everything, and so I got just about everything that I could find is installed and works. So. Yeah, that's a great part about the system. And I'm always amazed at how much better Ubuntu is polished-wise for desktop use than anything else. And I say this because I was trying to do some scanning, and I have several printers around here that do scanning. And I had problems on my other machine getting simple scan and stuff like that to acknowledge that I plugged in a scannable printer to it. But when I plugged it into this machine, it instantly detected it, added it, almost like, Windows, and without the whole having to blow your mind, connect to the internet, go Windows Update Service and try to find a driver. I mean, this instantly added an Epson random printer that I have on the floor that doesn't print but has an awesome scanner on it, and my other old Canon MP495 in the other room. I plugged it in, boom, it detected, added it instantly, and when I connected to some Wi-Fi over this past week when I was up in Flathead Lake area at a hotel, I snagged some Wi-Fi and it picked up a wireless printer in the office and it added that. So that's a pretty polished system to kind of just go ahead and do all this stuff for you automatically. It makes it a lot easier and more pleasurable experience using it as a desktop. Kudos to the Ubuntu team for the polish on this stuff.
Absolutely. We're going to move on. I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit because we've got a story that references some feedback. So I'm going to jump down to the feedback real quick. And this is from Nate, who is not currently a ham radio operator, but says he plans to be one someday. He sent an email saying, "Greetings. I'm not a ham at this time, though I do have interest in getting involved once I shed some weight. Selling off rentals." Okay, so it's slumlord. "So I have been very interested in your podcast and listening for a while in hopes of educating myself before I take the test. More on that another time. When I was listening to your show, you reviewed Gecko Linux." Yes, we did. "And OpenSUSE derivative distribution. You mentioned that you had to make an unwanted effort in adding the ham radio repositories. I'm an OpenSUSE member, and I do what I can to assist with the documentation on the wiki and assisting whomever I can with their OpenSUSE Linux journey and some other specific Linux assistances not relevant to this conversation. Probably shouldn't read the asides, but oh well. What I would like to do is enhance the OpenSUSE / Gecko Linux experience for you and whomever else wants to use the distros. I would like to improve that rating you gave to as close to 5 as possible. Yeah, because I gave it a 4.0. So.
Oh, that's...
Yep. Truthfully, my knowledge of ham radio and what programs exist is just so limited. I don't even know what to check, so I would need your assistance in reviewing the information. I will begin setting up an OpenSUSE page for getting started with ham radio applications and such. Your feedback and patience with me will be greatly appreciated. I will gladly take any input from anyone to make the information as clear, approachable, and as easy to on-ramp as possible for a new OpenSUSE or even Linux user. Thank you for your time, Nathan Wolf. And I've got a link here to the wiki that he set up, and that's what Bill was talking to him in the chat room earlier today about a portal that he set up, and he's got a bare-bones page up there with links to a one-click install for the PPA for OpenSUSE ham radio repos, and there's a bunch of information there, so he would like some contribution from, you know, us here at the show and anybody who's listening. Who's familiar with OpenSUSE and using it for ham radio or Gecko Linux, which is based on OpenSUSE, including, you know, up to and including actually contributing or proofreading or whatever. And like I said, a link to the wiki page is going to be in the show notes. Was there something else that I missed on this, or I pretty much cover it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. He also has a link to our show on there, so kudos to him for doing that. And yeah, so, you know, he just wants to make the experience of trying to find those kinds of applications easier. So, yeah, so it's, so people that are using OpenSUSE, you know, Tumbleweed, Leap, or Gecko Linux can easily get the software that, you know, what we both described as a little bit of a process trying to find it, and nothing that, you know, a few Google searches or whatever, you know, DuckDuckGo searches will solve for you. But yeah, it's really great, and the portal, you know, definitely brings all that information together in a quick, easy spot to find everything. And there's a there's a lot of packages out there that are all built for it, and you can kind of browse through the repository that is linked through the wiki, so you can see which packages have been updated and how long ago they were updated. And there were quite a few that were in the list that are recently updated, and I think they had like 111 ham radio packages in there. So definitely not a small library.
I mean, that's a small subset of the ham radio applications that are available out there, but
oh yeah,
definitely.
I mean, even a good start. Even the meta packages from Debian aren't all inclusive either. So
right,
but it gets you started, and this is a great place to get started.
All right, that's a great project that Nathan has there, and if you want to contribute, you can let us know, or you can just go to the wiki page, and there's information there on how you can contribute. Of course, it's a wiki, so it's designed for
Cubicle Nate when he comes into the chat room, and he's also at Cubicle Nate on Twitter.
On Twitter, yep. And wikis, of course, are designed for user-contributed content, so go check it out. And speaking of software that's not available in the repositories, we'll talk a little bit about Linpack, L-I-N-P-A-C, which is a packet client for Linux. And I picked this one because I wanted to talk about some more applications that are ham radio, you know, centric for Linux, because we don't talk about that as often as we probably should. At the Green Country Ham Fest, there were several people who came by and said that they still use Packet. Now, Packet's something I haven't done in some time, but apparently it's still alive in places where, you know, there are still Packet nodes and mailboxes or mailbox servers or whatever the hell they call them. They're still out there. And Linpack is an ncurses-based one. Apparently there is a GUI being developed for it, but it has not materialized yet. The last update to this was in, I believe, mid to late 2015, so it's actually, you know, been developed fairly recently. It's an ncurses packet radio terminal for use with Linux's native AX25 stack that mimics many of the feature-packed host mode programs that used to exist for DOS, but with any TNC running in KISS mode, and we all know what KISS mode means. It allows wide configuration and easy addition of new functions and special functions needed by the user. It's intended for keyboard-to-keyboard use, but also supports receiving basic PBBS messages, local Converse link chat rooms, basic node commands like mHerd, and making outgoing connections. The aim is to minimize the amount of hard-coded functions and create a complete set of applications that can be easily expanded and or completely reconfigured via a simple macro language. They also mentioned the GUI version, which is being developed, which provides either a Java Swing GUI or can be used with the familiar NCurses environment. I've got a link to the SourceForge place where you can download it. I have not given it a try as far as building it. I assume you basically just need the curses library and ham library and the AX25 stack. Then you should be able to build it. And there's also a documentation page that I found for another distribution. Let's see, what Trinity. There's a documentation for Trinity OS, but it looked pretty comprehensive. And the page that I linked to actually has all kinds of information about different ham radio packages. Linpack just happens to be one of them. My recollection of using Packet was to, you know, basically send email via ham radio or do some, I guess, basic simplex operation. Am I forgetting something about Packet? I'm sure I probably am.
No, that's pretty much it.
Okay.
You got digipeaters that will repeat your messages and stuff like that. The ISS has a digipeater on it. Yeah, it's made for sending like email, you know, or station to station mail.
Okay. Yeah, good. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't like omitting something. Yeah. But apparently in some parts of the country and probably in various places around the world, Packet is still in some kind of use. Around here, it's dead as a doornail. You can't, there is no one to connect to.
Most people went to APRS did Packet. And so like most of your traffic is all APRS based traffic. And actually in the Linpack is in the repo and it is at current version 0.24.
So is it called Linpack? Because on Jesse, yep. I was not able to install it.
Oh, well, I just installed it while we were talking. So
are you
there's definitely a build in the Ubuntu one.
Okay, it might be an Ubuntu. Is that based on... Well, but you have the latest Ubuntu, right? So that's probably based on Squeeze. Yeah, so I'm sure it's in the later version, but it's not in the current... Or it's not in the current stable. So anyway, if you need some Packet, do that. And of course, it's NCurses-based, so it doesn't require a GUI. It can be used in a lightweight operation. And it's actually a pretty nice interface. It looks standard NCurses, very colorful. Lots of greens and blues and whites, which seems to be the de facto standard for ham radio applications using NCurses, but what are you going to do? It's no worse than some of the color schemes I was playing around with for YFK test, because, man, those are awful. okay, so what we're going to do for the music is we're going to play a song that only the people who are listening right now and us here at the show are going to be able to hear, because there are too many things to badger out of it.
Yeah, but 90% of the song would be badger.
Yeah, so. Pretty much. Well, it's not quite that bad. But and the reason we're going to play it is because, well, there's a couple of reasons. The first is we just saw Jonathan Colton play over the weekend, and we've sort of had a thing with Jonathan Colton lately. We played one of his songs on the last episode, and we're going to play one on this episode. And it just so happens that this song is called First of May. And as it happens while we're recording this episode, it is the first of May. So, it seems incredibly appropriate. This came out of one of his very, very early albums, back in 2003, off Smoking Monkey. And, as we've said, it's called First of May. So for the very few people who are actually going to get to hear it, here you go. Happy First of May, everybody. So moving on from the music that no one got to hear, we'll, go to our announcements and feedback. And we do have, quite a bit of feedback, actually. So I'm going to skip the first bit of feedback I put till a little bit later, and we'll go to the second one, which is an email from Steve, KD0IJP. And he says, guys, this was posted just today on rtl-sdr.com. Thought you might want to include it in tonight's program. Well, we're not going to include it in that program or this one, but we will do it probably in the next one. I've been wanting to set up a weather satellite receiving and decoding system with an RTL-SDR dongle. But it has always been annoying to me that the only software available for decoding the image is Windows software. That has now changed. This is available via GitHub or as a binary, and it is GPLv3. From Steve, he cites rtl-sdr.com, and it's a LRPT image decoder for Windows, Linux, macOS, and RPies. So, available for all of those platforms, and I haven't had a chance to look at it, but I definitely will, and I'm sure Bill will probably look at it as well between now and the next time we talk about this. So maybe we can say something, you know, educational or informative or useful about it. But it definitely sounds interesting, and it's nice that it's being released in a cross-platform way and is GPL. So very cool. Thanks, Steve, for pointing that out, and we will definitely talk more about this in an upcoming episode. We also got an email from Dan, N5DBL, who visited with us at Green Country Hamfest. He said, it was a pleasure speaking with you today at the Claremore Hamfest. I picked up a DVD and was planning on messing with it tomorrow. I look forward to learning more about how things are going with Linux and ham radio. Thanks, Dan Looper, N5DBL. So very cool. Thanks for stopping by the booth when we were there back in, you know, a long time ago now. Good to meet you, and I hope that worked out for you. I haven't heard from him since, so either it's working well or he threw it in the trash. I guess, you know, maybe we'll find out.
Right.
He took one of our cards, so if he's listening to this, like, maybe he'll respond and tell us what happened. But like I said, I haven't heard from him since. So hopefully it's working well for you, Dan. And if it's not and you hear this, send me some email. We'll see what we can do to help you out. I also got an email from Greg, Whiskey Alpha 8, Fox Juliet Kilo. He said, hi, Russ. Regarding the Og feed, what happened to episode 21? It seems to be AWOL, yet the file for episode 21 exists. The audio claims it's episode 19A, the final coverage of OSCON. I suspect a computer snafu. Ah, well, Badger happens. 73 Greg, WA8FJK, which is, man, that's a tough one in Morse code. actually, it's a tough one in English, too. But anyway, I responded to Greg about what happened with that, and I did some renumbering, and I mentioned this, long time ago, probably episode 30-something. I had the great idea that I was going to start numbering episodes like A episodes and B episodes and stuff like that, and then said, no, that's really stupid, and then just renamed them so that they're all numerically sequenced. But those, of course, included audio mentioning that they were 18A and 19A, and of course that remained the same even though the episode numbers actually changed. So hopefully that makes some sense. All the episodes, you know, sort of exist. It's just that a couple were skipped. Like 18A became 19 and 19A became 21 and so on and so forth. So, but they're all there. You're not missing anything. No worries. And thanks, by the way, for going back to the beginning and listening to like everything from square one. Even I don't do that because I don't like the cringe factor. So,
but you've been here for all of them.
I have been here for all. Well, I think I might have missed one or two, but of the early ones. But I'm pretty sure I've been here for most of them. We already talked about the feedback from Nate, so that's all we had. And then we don't have any announcements except for Hamvention coming up. Our next episode, episode number 189, will actually be recorded live at Hamvention.
Woohoo!
So we have our booth. Our logo and our information is already up on the vendor list. We're all set to go. We've got all the equipment we need, and we've got a bunch of merch that is being created, and we should have that to bring with us. So we're definitely looking forward to Hamvention this year. It'll be a lot of fun, and like I said, probably, I'm not sure if we're going to do it Friday or Saturday, probably Saturday, I imagine, sometime. We will sit down and record episode number 189. So we'll probably get out some more specific details about that between now and then via the website. So if you happen to be at Hamvention and want to be a part of that, because I'm sure we'll do some, you know, walk-up interviews or something with people who are by the table at the time we do it, keep track of that, and you can be a part of the show. And there's also the Generosity campaign. Links to it are on the webpage. It's url.bcts.info/hamvention2017. We are definitely still taking donations for that. Any little bit helps. Please share on all the social media networks. Get the word out there. Put a couple of bucks in the bucket, and we'll see you all in, well, I was going to say Dayton, but it's actually Xenia this year. So we'll see you in Ohio.
Yeah. Definitely be the same state.
Yes. And actually not that far. And of course, the real Dayton Hamvention wasn't in Dayton anyway. It was in Trotwood. So, you know, yeah, whatever.
Not anywhere close to Dayton, really.
Yeah.
So, details.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm actually looking at the Hamvention website. I'm not going to be able to test. The testing is going to be in the basement of the United Methodist or United Presbyterian. So Brian told me he figured that's what was going to happen. So,
all right, well, let's not talk about that now. Let's move on.
Well, yeah. So
because
we're going to have to find someplace else for me to test at.
Yep. So. We'll make sure it happens.
Okay.
All right. And besides, we have to move on from boring things like amateur radio and open source to food.
Yay. Yeah,
so there's Cheryl's Recipe Corner. All right. What do you got?
Tonight we're going to do chicken marsala and pan fried asparagus. So, does that sound okay?
Sounds great to me.
All right, good deal. Russ and I are big fans of Italian type foods. And anytime we go eat at someplace like the Cheesecake Factory or whatever, my go-to is chicken marsala. So anyway, tonight's recipes for chicken marsala. It's quick and easy. You need flour to bread your chicken, salt, pepper, oregano, and of course chicken, butter, olive oil, some mushrooms, some marsala wine, and some cooking sherry. And mix all that together and cook it up. Of course, directions are going to be in the show notes. I'm a big fan of asparagus, so I decided to toss in a recipe for pan-fried asparagus, which involves butter, olive oil, salt, pepper, garlic, and asparagus. And once you're done cooking it, throw on a little tiny squirt of lemon juice and some hummus.
Sounds good. Very Italian. And asparagus is always good.
Tasty. You say that now that you've
now that we've become addicted to it. Yeah,
now that he's a fan, right?
Yeah.
Usually, if we go anywhere that serves asparagus, I'm desperately, you know, yes, I'll take that as my side. Russ always goes for potatoes, or usually. So.
Well, potatoes and vegetables to me are not the same sort of thing. They're not the same class of food. So
you can have them both.
Well, yeah, but usually when I go have a side, it's usually like a potato and a salad, or a potato and like broccoli or something like that. But
you could have asparagus instead of broccoli.
That's true. I could, but I also really like broccoli.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I was not a broccoli fan until Russ moved here, and he basically forced me to eat it.
I didn't force you to eat it.
Yeah, you're still not winning with the cauliflower.
I'm not.
Thing.
Yeah, and Brussels sprouts? Yes or no?
I'm more prone to eat Brussels sprouts than I am cauliflower currently.
Okay. Well, that's good, because Brussels sprouts are also good.
Yes.
Just
don't make them mushy.
Oh, yeah, no.
No, my mother really knows how to cook Brussels sprouts. I don't know how she does it, but they always come out amazing. Just like little tiny, like nice
heads
firm
of cabbage.
Heads of cabbage. Yeah. Yep, just, and she doesn't do anything with them. She doesn't season them or butter them or anything like that. And they're just perfect. Yep.
Now, if I could ever get you to eat beets.
Never happening. Mm. Never.
Yeah, I had oven roasted beets while we were in Chicago, and I was digging that. Russ is just like, boo. Yeah.
No, anytime I see beets on a salad bar, I'm like, beets.
Oh yeah, I love pickled beets. There's a Brazilian steakhouse here that has pickled beets on their salad bar, and I will get a huge plate of them. Russ, the whole time I'm eating them, he's like, that is disgusting. Yeah, you're awesome. Just
cannot
gross.
Do beets. Sorry. I keep trying and I keep failing. All right, well, very good. Try out some chicken marsala and pan-fried asparagus. That sounds like a good meal to me. And with that meal, you could actually pair a nice scotch, I guess. Sure, why not?
A glass of wine would probably be better, but
Screw that wine.
Screw the scotch. Yeah, screw the scotch.
No,
go with the wine.
No, screw the scotch. Yep. I passed up on an announcement earlier, and it's not really an announcement. It's just that I'm going to be talking about, in my whiskey corner tonight, the Lagavulin 16-year-old scotch, and I got a bottle of this in the mail from one of our listeners, Jonas Rulo. I know he mentioned this in the chat room several episodes ago, that he would shop at Costco, and they had it really, really cheap, because I was complaining about how expensive it is here, and lo and behold, I got a package from Hawaii with a bottle of scotch in it.
And tea.
And tea, that's right, yes. It came tea. And since I don't drink tea, I gave that to Cheryl. Have you tried it yet?
No, I have not tried the tea yet. We haven't been home.
Well, that's true. So we'll get around to trying the tea, Jonas, but thank you very much for the bottle of scotch, and I'm going to actually review the scotch now. It's one of my absolute favorites. Lagavulin 16 is an Islay scotch. I'm looking at it right now in my glass, and it has a nice sort of medium to deep amber color. That's a very nice color for a scotch. And what's nice about this is it's a 16-year-old scotch, which is relatively affordable, depending on where you can find it. I've seen it as cheap as about $50 for a 750, and around here it's as high as $108. So where you get it definitely determines how much you're going to pay for it. So I now have 2.5 bottles of this stuff right now. Yeah. It's 43% ABV. That's 86 proof, if you're doing the math. So let me nose it here. You get the ocean salt, like the sea salt, and a lot of times it's called brine. You get the Band-Aid, the smoke, the peat. And the nice thing about it is it's so easy on the nose, even though it's 86 proof. You can hardly tell that there's alcohol in it. A very smoky, iodine-y salt brine. I'm sure my nose is not doing me a lot of justice right now, but there's spices like green spices like parsley, maybe a little basil, like basil, bay, oregano, not really oregano though, sort of the light, sweeter spices, not really heavy stuff. There's a lot of that in there. Vanilla, sherry, maybe a little lemon zest. Yeah, this is really nice. You can definitely get it, the salty, and there's like, you can taste the oak in it too, the sherry from the cask. Yeah, the peat and smoke is very, I mean, this is an Islay Scotch, so you're going to get a lot of that. It's a lot of sweet spice, almost like fruit, like candied fruit, like in fruitcake, like figs, like fig bar type stuff, dates, the Band-Aid, big time, vanilla.
Who would have ever thought a selling point for Scotch would be the Band-Aid taste?
Band-Aid, yeah.
Yeah. But that's what it
every
smells
time you
and
say
tastes
that,
like.
I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, surprisingly, though, it's really good. So, and if my nose was better, I'd be able to pull more out of it, because I know the first few times I tried it, there's just so many different flavors in there. It's aged so perfectly that it's hard to pass this one up. If there's a Scotch you should have or at least try, this is definitely one of them. And I know it's going to rate very highly on my 100-point scale. I'm going to leave a little room in case something comes along that's better, but so far this is the best one I've ever had. And I rate it at a 96. There's a little room for something in there to just like totally wow me, but so far I haven't found one better. So with that, was that a snore? Were you snoring?
What was going on? Where am I at?
All right. I'm sure everybody in the chat room is like long asleep at this point. We just need to move on to our closing little segment here, which is the social media roundup.
Okay.
And guess what? I randomized the list again. So
on the list this week for subscriptions, we have Jonas Rulo, Robert Doherty, Michael Connolly, Michael D'Aiello, Kevin Murray, Bill Stearns, Robert Halliday, James Blocker, Scott Pettigrew, Dub Redder, Alan Wilson, Ronald Icke, Bob Yerke, Wayne Carpenter, John Clark, John Fochke, Steven Sainer, Jeremy Hall, Donald Gever, Dylan Engel, Robert Pitts, Johnny Kinsey, Edward Donnelly, Charlie Brown, Brian Smith, Bill Piotr, Christopher Weaver, Darren King, and Paul Griffith. For Facebook, we have Robert Kaldenbach, Eric Wells, Wilson de Fonseca, guessing that's right, Matthew Prey, Jan, what the whole thing is pronounced?
Jan Stoppost.
Oh, gotcha. Maybe you should have put that, sorry.
I thought it was obvious.
Not, no, well, okay. Jan Stophorst, Vincent Corbo, Tapio, Jacob Daniels, Rob Gasparic, and Larry Johnston. Google Plus is Steve Reed. Twitter is Brian D. Evans, Katja Ingel, or Inga, I'm guessing, VA3AGV, Barra 2016, Beezlebug, KC8QCH, BCBC579, Gnome 2726, DE0SJA?
2E0.
2E0. Winger 99, Princey B. Hardwaj 2, The Real 50 Ohm, Lynn H. Lit 88, Gareth Holmes, OK7AN, Peak Aerial TX, and 8CH Tech. For YouTube is JD East. For the mailing list is Lonnie Ayers, and Nothing in Myself.
Yep, that's it. So we had quite a few because there are sort of a couple episodes. Well, there was an episode in between that we didn't record. We kind of pushed it back till now. So our list of new subscribers for various things was pretty extensive. And it looks like, I didn't look this up, but I'm going to look it up now just because I've got a second. The Real 50 Ohm, I don't know if he's a amateur radio-based rapper, but his Twitter account says he's a rapper and an amateur radio enthusiast. I don't know if he combines those two things.
That'd be cool.
But see, I'm not finding anything about him on Google. It says QRO hip-hop artist and amateur radio enthusiast. Might be a joke, because he's got one follower and he's following one person.
It's a troll.
Yeah, he's a troll. And if he's not, you have to defend yourself. So
yes, get some more followers.
Right.
Or follow some more people.
All right. So
does he have the egg icon?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Yep, it's a total fake.
You gotta see your rapper style. You gotta show us, you know, swag. Or
yeah, that's right. We'll play some of your music if you're a real person.
That's right.
So, well, that's that. Let's check the chat room, see if anybody's saying anything, doing anything. Looks like it's been kind of dead in there, although Ted says he's thirsty after my whiskey review. So, probably because it took so friggin' long.
I think they're thoroughly asleep in there.
I believe they are. So that,
Oh, there's Don.
There, Don. Don sent a smiley face. Okay. So who left early and didn't get to hear the song?
KD5HQN left early.
Right. But we had KB2YSI, and we had KC9ZMY, and we had WA0EIR in the chat room listening to us. So that's very cool. Thanks for tuning into the show, the real live show. But I think with that, we're going to send episode 188 into the can. Anyway, that means I have to hit the outro button, and oh yeah, there's music. Cool. So you can become an LHS ambassador. Visit the website for upcoming events and information on how you can represent Linux in the Ham Shack at a nearby LinuxCon or HamFest. We love feedback. You can email us at info@lhspodcast.info, comment on an episode on the website, post on Google+, Facebook, or Twitter, or leave a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. Visit our IRC channel, Octothorpe LHS Podcast, on Freenode, and subscribe to our mailing list. Show merchandise from coffee mugs to t-shirts to wall clocks and all kinds of other stuff can be purchased at www.cafepress.com/LHS Podcast. And a little bit of those purchases go to help support the show. You can also help the show by clicking on the sponsored ads in the right-hand column of the homepage. Listen to us live every other Monday night at 8 o'clock Central Time. That's early Tuesday morning at 0100 Zulu in the summer and 0200 Zulu in the winter. Our recording schedule and countdown timer to the next episode are on the website, and that website is lhspodcast.info for everything you ever want to know about the show. Thank you to all of our listeners, live and quasi-live, past, present, and future, and to those who have given their time, ears, shares, and money for the show. We appreciate each and every one of you. And so that has been episode number 188 of Linux in the Ham Shack. The next one will be coming to you from Hamvention 2017 in Xenia, Ohio, and we hope to see you all there. So from Studio 3D here in Southwest Missouri, I'm Russ, K5TUX. And that's Cheryl over there.
Good night, everyone.
And from somewhere out in the wilds and the bluffs and the raging moose of Montana is Bill, NE4RD.
73, everyone.
And we'll catch you in a couple of weeks' time. Actually, not quite a couple of weeks' time, because it's Hamvention time. See you there.
More fun shooting guns in the house.